Hey, it's episode 420 of the 343 podcast. There's so many gold nuggets in this episode. It's hard to kind of come up with an intro that encapsulates all of it. So I came up with three words: credentialism, creativity, and confusion. Credentialisms. Do you have an A, B, C, D, E, F, G license? Yes or no? Does that even matter? Parents, should you even be looking at that? Coaches, should you be wasting all of this kind of money? Should you be promoting yourself with these credentials? I talk a lot about that sort of stuff. Number two was the creativity aspect. You know, there's this thing going around about creativity versus robots. Oh, we don't develop great players here in the United States because they're all robotic. What is that really? I talk about that. Number three is confusion. Confusion about the ecosystem. Confusion in general, because there's so many moving pieces that go into developing a soccer player, developing as a coach, developing a club, developing the ecosystem, that we get lost. I'm going to help resolve some of that as well. Speaking of coaching education and being able to develop players individually and the team collectively, coaches, you need to go to 343coaching.com. There are free and premium programs for you there. First launched in 2013, there have been thousands of coaches who have gone through the program or are still in the program to this day, and they have marked successes in their own development, in their team's development, in their players' development. So I repeat, go to 343coaching.com and hop on board as soon as possible. And parents, you are critical to your kids' development as well. For you, we've codified our decades worth of experience, our pioneering work here in the United States from the ages of U9 up to and including professional player careers. So we've seen it all at all the age groups, all the levels, life cycle after life cycle after life cycle, and we've codified it again at 343masterclass.com. So parents, 343masterclass.com is where you want to go. Don't wait till your kid's already 15, 16, 18 years of age. By then it's too late. So the earlier the better. Don't wait. Head on over there and sign up for the program. Lastly, if you happen to be coaching in the 7v7 format, we have a dedicated course and program for you at 7v7coaching.com. All right, everybody, I hope you enjoy this episode. Golden nuggets galore, per usual. Here we go.
First of all, I just want to say I'm about halfway through the episode of You and Jimmy, Jimmy Obleda, badass episode. The first thing that I love is you ask him, hey, Jimmy, you know, give us a 30-second or 5-minute background on who you are. And Jimmy's first comment was, I'm Jimmy and I'm a winner, you know. Not too many people left like that in this country. So massive respect to him. I can't wait to finish the rest of the episode. And I think the fans will like that one as well. What were your thoughts? Or do you have anything to say about that episode, Gary? How did you perceive it? And what did you think about the entire conversation?
No, it's really good. And I knew it would be good because I know Jimmy and I know his heritage. He is from Uruguay. And since I know Jimmy, I know how much fire and passion he has inside. Then that makes for a great podcast guest, in addition to having subject matter expertise, deep subject matter expertise, and being a winner. And historically, up until this day, pushing the very boundaries of what is possible in soccer in this country. So when you have somebody like that, Benny, you know it's going to be good, and you know you're not going to get politically correct answers, and you know you're going to get reality and useful insights out of somebody like that. That's why we don't have that many guests, Benny, because most all practitioners out there in the space don't have that sort of background and frankly, qualifications. And what I mean by qualifications is not, oh, do you have a stupid soccer license? That means not. I wipe my ass with your soccer license. It means nothing. Okay. So that's why we don't have that many guests. I know there are good practitioners out there, no doubt, but people like Jimmy are very rare, few and far between.
100%, man. Unfortunately, the thing about the whole coaching licenses is that we've talked about it many times, is even if there are good practitioners out there, that unfortunately, if you want to get elevated in this country, or if you want to get opportunities, you have to go through all the courses and you have to go to the B and to the A and get your pro license eventually. So even though there are good practitioners are out there, you know, there's a lot of people that heavily rely on that credential to market or sell themselves. And to me, I think those are the phony ones. You know, it's a true coach, a true practitioner, when none of that shit even comes up and it's just, hey, I'm going to flow. I'm going to tell you what I know. If they're saying in their Instagram bio or whatever it is, hey, I'm a UEFA B license, USA license, like, get the fuck away from that guy, bro. Sorry to all the people that offends, but that's just the reality, bro.
Yeah, no, I will not. I mean, it might happen by accident at some point, but if I'm going to have a guest on the show and I do at least the smallest bit of due diligence, if I click on their social media profile and you have your licenses out there, no chance, because there's an extremely high probability that you're terrible. If you have to put your licenses on your stupid social media profiles, you are horrific, horrifying. One of these, just the tool, total tool. So, hey, go, coaches, like you said, Benny, coaches, go get your licenses. Go jump through the hoop because you need that stupid little gatekeeper piece of paper to get jobs, you know, and parents are get excited. Ooh, look, he's got a B license. You know, he put in all this work and stuff. But if you want to talk to somebody legit, know that legit people wipe their ass with your license. And if you are clinging on to a license as some sort of proof that you are legit, you are the biggest of frauds. Okay, Benny, can we get into today's subject matter?
Well, I wanted to bring up one more thing, if you don't mind. One more thing.
Go ahead.
It's two things for you, Gary. One is, back in the day, did you ever think about just going through those courses so you can see what U.S. soccer is trying to say?
No.
And the other?
No.
No, why? No, why though? Why?
Because my time is very valuable to me. And you're basically telling me I'm going to waste my time. And then you're saying, well, no, you're not wasting your time. You're doing market research, Gary. You're going to go and see what they, why do I have to go and see? People already tell me what's in there. People who actually know what the F they're talking about, who are exceptional practitioners, they already tell me what's happening in those classrooms and then what's happening out in the field. And by the way, when they tell me who the instructors are or whatever, and then I hear those instructors, because there's video of these guys or audio of these guys, bro, just put a bullet in my head. I am not going to sit there for hours or weeks or whatever it is and listen to some Muppet talking about nonsense. It's Benny, it's kind of like, I don't know, you're asking me to, well, Gary, go do some market research, sit in a, I don't know what the analogy is. You get the idea.
Sit in an Algebra 1 class and see what they're teaching.
And by somebody who doesn't know dick about math.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. I was just curious, you know, because I know you're all about doing research and all that type of stuff.
I'm not about doing research.
You're a scientist, bro.
Yeah, you're that kind of research. But I want the audience not
that's
to get
I'm, that's what I'm
twisted.
Saying.
I don't want the audience to think that I'm all about research. Oh, I study what's happening in soccer, you know, and I dive into different research articles of soccer, or I get Sir Alex Ferguson's book and I'm reading Ferguson's book to see what insights he's got or what he says or what the biographer says or stories about him in the locker room or whatever. I wipe my ass with all of that.
No, I didn't mean that. I meant from a scientific perspective, but yeah. I'm sure that you do apply that in some sense to soccer. You have to.
Sure. Yeah, right? Sure. But I just didn't want the audience to think that, as if that is the way of learning or a important way of learning. That's another thing, by the way, how I detect frauds. If you're out there and you're citing some research article about child development and how it applies to youth soccer, or you're citing some, I don't know, just all this nonsense research. If you're doing this stuff to back up your claims or whatever, you do not know what you're talking about. You're terrible.
Yeah. There has to be some value in that type of stuff, though. I mean, you just said a book on like Sir Alex Ferguson. Like if you're a coach and you read a book on Sir Alex Ferguson, like that can only help you, right? It's not going to fucking make you a worse coach, right?
Yeah. But listen, Benny, here, I'll do another analogy, even though analogies are flawed and it's not a great way of reasoning, because the best way of reasoning is from first principles. But here's another analogy. You know how many people want to be like influencers or how many people want to be famous or how many people want to be successful entrepreneurs or successful business people or successful careers or all this stuff. They'll go and they'll read the biography of Steve Jobs, right? Or they'll go and they'll pick up some self-help books or all, there's entire genres or cottage industries that are built around these sorts of consumables. And how many of those people who picked up Steve Jobs' biography went out and became somebody successful or even remotely successful? Like less than 1%, like a ridiculously small percent. And it's not the book that helped them become successful. Does that make sense? So it's the same thing in soccer. It's kind of like, yeah, it won't hurt you. Well, actually, you have to be a little bit careful because it can hurt you because you might be here as some sort of Muppet who doesn't know what he's doing. And you read this book and you learn, quote unquote, lessons from Sir Alex Ferguson's quotes or whatever, but you do not have the capacity to actually contextualize what is said in Sir Alex Ferguson's book at all. You don't get it because you don't have the expertise to get it. You get it at a very superficial level, and you may misapply what you think you learned into your own environment. And it's the exact wrong thing to do in your environment. So it actually can hurt you.
Yeah, but didn't Sir Alex Ferguson and Steve Jobs and Pep and Mourinho, weren't they in the same place at one point in their life of they didn't know Dick? Okay, and so where are they getting their information from, right? It's information keeps getting passed down from generation to generation. But at the same time, like you're telling me that those guys didn't read about successful people and you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but the problem with that, Benny, that logical argument is the correlation, right? If Steve Jobs read a biography on Carnegie, you know, then he became successful. That is not the correlation.
I see what you're saying.
It's actually because he tinkered in the garage and worked his 60, 80 hours a week trying to figure out how to create a computer, coupled with his buddy Steve Wozniak, and then learned a shit ton about marketing and aesthetics and design. And it just work, getting your hands dirty and doing it at the cutting edge or getting to the cutting edge by putting in your life force into the subject. That's how he became who he became. He didn't read Rockefeller's biography and be like, oh, okay, yeah, well, that's how I'm going to do it in any sort of way.
I get what you're saying, Gary. I'm just curious, like trying to pick the minds of these genius, you know, because at the end of the day, they also started from scratch. They started from zero and they had to work their way up. But like I'm wondering where they got their knowledge from of obviously, like if we're talking about Steve Jobs, like this fool was just a master of fucking grinding. And he learned everything that he could about the computer industry and marketing and stuff like that. But
it's twofold, Benny. It's twofold. There's theory and there's practice, right? So you can go to school and sit in a lecture hall for 4 years or 6 years or 8 years, do your bachelor's or your master's or your PhD, and you're basically doing theory for by and large. You're not actually in the real world doing real things, getting real pushback from the marketplace and real pushback from physics itself, right? To see how nature actually behaves and works and doesn't. So you can do the theory stuff. Sure. Is it valuable? Yeah, absolutely. Of course it is. But the vast majority of it all is actually in the field doing the actual thing. So this is why I say, if you are broadcasting yourself and leaning on theory to support your positions in soccer, for instance, well, oh, Mourinho said this, or Ferguson said that, or Johan Cruyff, you know, has this quote or that quote. If that is what you are relying on in a very significant fashion, then that is a signal that you actually don't know what you're doing. It should be inverted, Benny. It should be 95% from your own work and life experience and execution of over thousands of hours of work. That is where your knowledge should be broadcasted from. And then maybe a sprinkle of 3 or 5% maybe of, oh, look at Mourinho, or look at this quote from company or something. Fine. Want to sprinkle that on for a little bit of flavor, or sprinkle that on for a little bit of alignment? Fine. But when you publish on your social media channels or anywhere that I have a UEFA Pro, or I have this credential, or I went to the NSCAA, whatever coaching convention, and I had a booth, you know, and I spoke to people, and you get it. We're killing it. We're beating a dead horse at this point.
Last question, Gary, and then we'll hop into it. Let's say,
okay.
No, because this is valuable, dude.
Okay.
Let's say you're a new coach, just starting out, 19, 20, 21 years old. You don't have any coaching experience or life experience. And so at that point, what are you supposed to rely on? Because you're saying, right, you should be relying on you going out and executing your craft and running sessions and coaching a team. But if you're a new coach, you just started, you're 19 or 20, you don't have that type of life experience. So for those guys, what are you supposed to do? Who do you rely on, you know?
Well, we've talked about this a lot over the 400 episodes that we've had, and a lot of the stuff that I write. That is the biggest problem here, especially in the United States. How does somebody who doesn't know any better, just getting into it or is inexperienced, how do you discern who knows versus who doesn't know? Meaning who you should learn from and who you should not be learning from. It's very challenging, okay? And part of my rant for the past 10 minutes is in telling people, hey, there are red flags as to who you should not be learning from. And some of the red flags are these sorts of licensed people out there. Now, there's one surefire way. Find somebody who has provable, meaning an ample video library of evidence of their own teams playing football and showcasing everything that it is that they preach about how they coach and what they do and how they do what they do. Because if you're just seeing somebody talk, blah, 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 this is my philosophy, this is methodology, this is what's right and this is what's wrong, this is how you should do it, this is not how you should do it, but they have no video evidence to back them up. And I'm not just talking about a stupid 2-minute clip that you can compile out of a 200 games that you've coached. You compiled 2-minute clip, you nitpicked, you know, even the worst coach in the world can probably find 2 minutes of his team's 3,000 hours worth of game footage, 2 minutes to say, oh yeah, this is how I play. Nonsense. Find people who have entire games posted on YouTube, on whatever. Find people who have long form video of their actual team performing. So that's one piece of evidence. The other piece of evidence, Benny, is can the coach or can the educator or whoever flow with their communication? So in two arenas, one, with their actual players. So is there any video evidence of the particular person you're learning from actually communicating to their actual players in the actual team environment? That way you can see, okay, what's going on here? And no, it doesn't count if you see somebody communicating to players that are borrowed for a coaching convention. And then, you know, it's all scripted, you know, for the cameras and all scripted for the audience. That doesn't count. We need to see the coach in their own element. So if they don't have that video published or videos published online, you can maybe, hopefully if they're local, and that's another thing. Hopefully you can find somebody local, go to their training sessions and sit on the sideline while the person trains their team and witness how they train the team. What's the communication style look like? Does it flow from one activity to another? Is he squeezing the maximum potential out of the players in every activity and every repetition? Do the players respect the coach? And again, I know it's difficult because you need an experienced eye to see these things too, okay? But at least make this sort of effort to try to discern whether somebody knows what they're doing or doesn't know what they're doing. So that's the communication of the coach in that element, right? The coaching element, the actual environment. Then there is, hey, how does he speak when being interviewed? or on podcasts or on YouTube or all these different mediums now that everybody participates in? Are they able to flow kind of effortlessly? That's another tell, because if you master something, it's all in here and it's just waiting to come out. And hopefully it's not scripted. Hopefully this coach didn't get questions beforehand and prepared how he's going to answer things or not answer things. Because a lot of these things are scripted, Benny, or at least not totally scripted, but you prepare yourself for it. If it's more spontaneous, then that's also another piece of evidence that this person might know what they're talking about.
Yeah.
So you got all those elements put together, and hopefully that puts you on the right path to identifying who knows stuff and who doesn't know stuff.
Yes, but sadly in this country, Gary, what you just finished describing, right? Go and find somebody with an extensive video library, footage of them, coaching sessions, the way that they speak to players. Outside of 343, Gary, you don't see much of that on YouTube or Instagram. Like, not many coaches in this generation are putting themselves out there to say, hey, watch an entire match of my team, or watch how I deliver a halftime, you know, speech to my players. It doesn't really exist, bro, in this country. Like, sure, you're going to see fucking a highlight clip of the team, and yeah, they make one 10 pass sequence that leads to goal, but the rest of the game is fucking jungle ball, right? You don't see that much in this country, dude, of what we're offering here.
Well, there's a reason for that, Benny.
Great intro right there. Are you ready to hop into it?
Maybe it's a standalone episode, but yeah, let's hop into
the actual topic. Nah, listen, man, every week that goes by, I keep getting more and more frustrated with just soccer in general in this country, but I'm starting to, now that I myself am a parent, I'm starting to put myself in the shoes of parents, and I'm thinking, like, man, like, you guys are getting royally screwed, bro, with what some of these clubs and teams are offering. A big thing that I want to talk about tonight, Gary, I'm sure you've seen it, I'm sure every coach that's listening to this podcast has seen it. You go and look at a club session, Gary, and a coach is spending, let's say their session is an hour and a half. A coach will spend maybe an hour on individual technical work within their session. Instead of focusing on the team, instead of focusing on how we're going to play together, how we're going to move and shift together. And then you see them on the weekend and their teams are just absolutely shocking. Nobody knows what their role is on the field. Nobody knows how to move together. It looks like 11 individual guys with, you know, their own objective out there. So really what I want to talk about tonight, Gary, is in the team training environment, let's say you're playing club, whatever level it is, ECNL, MLS Next, EA, in the team training environment, how much time is there to spend on individual work, if any at all? And how much of it should be, hey, we're going to meet two times a week, or we're training two or three times a week. Let's spend all that time working as a team, working as a collective, working on building out of the back, attacking patterns, right? Learning how to move with each other, throw in set pieces, right? But what I have been seeing for the past, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 years, so many coaches, bro, I watch their sessions and it's like the first 45 minutes is, okay, you're going to dribble up through a cone. We're going to work on step overs. We're going to work on this. We're going to work on, you know, a little, and it's all individualized, right? And there's no collective goal. There's no team effort. So I guess my biggest question to you, Gary, is in the team training environment, is there any time for the individual, or should it be 100% focused towards the collective?
We could pull in this thread in a million different ways. Let me tell you what I wrote down as you were talking. Number one is about the reason why you're seeing what you're seeing, Benny. And first off, I don't know, because I haven't been out there scoping out youth coaches anymore and what they're doing. But I'm going to take your word for it because I believe you. Okay, why are they doing that? So I wrote down two things as you were talking. Number one, I wrote down the market forces these coaches into doing technical work. Now, what do I mean by that? I mean that the narrative here, the American soccer narrative over the past 10 years, or so is there's a narrative that's been crafted about development, that it should be all about the individual, which, okay, that makes sense. So far, so good. Okay, it's about the individual. But how that has been interpreted is that you should be doing individual technical work in your team training sessions. So that's one narrative that's swirling out there. And going to my original rant for 20 minutes is, why is that narrative out there? Well, it's coming from people who don't know any better, who read books or social media posts quotes from overseas academies and overseas coaches and overseas technical directors and the pros saying, oh yeah, at the youth level, it should all be about the individual development, blah, 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 blah. But they are not capacitated to interpret the correct, how to contextualize that. They actually think that overseas, that Real Betis or Barcelona or whoever is out there on the fields at the youth level, and they're doing all these little technical things. They're going through, dribbling through cones, they're doing little scissors, they're doing little juggling exercises, they're doing little passes back and forth and maximizing, you know, ball contact and all that stuff. That's what they have in their heads, and that's not what's happening over there, Benny. So that's one thing. The other thing is that coaches, and I'm sure I'm going to insult a lot of people here, but I just need to speak my mind, Benny. Coaches who don't know how to train teams, because it's very complicated. It's actually not that simple to train a collective, okay, and actually unify a collective in a methodology, in a philosophy. When you're incompetent in that, it's way easier, because anybody can do the following: lay out the cones and then have the kids dribble through cones or dribble through gates or do juggling exercises and the individual skills that you're talking about, the little toe taps or the inside and outside things and all that. That's easy. That's easy. My grandma can do that. I can show anybody off the street, hey, here are little individual exercises. Go coach this team. And they'll be able to do it, Benny. Because you don't need amazing teaching skills, or you don't need amazing communication skills, or you don't actually need to have watched a lot of soccer to see what works and what doesn't work or anything, man. So that's the other reason why you see this pervasiveness in American soccer team training, the individual stuff. The second thing is I wrote down they don't know any better, and that's why they teach individual things.
Yeah.
So now comes your question. How much should you be doing of this? Look, let me preface it with a disclaimer. I've only been involved, the youngest age group that I've been involved in any sort of way is with 9-year-olds. That's the youngest age group, okay? And at a decent level, a good level of 9-year-olds. At that age, it should already be like 75%, you know, kind of teaching the individual how to operate in the team environment. And then maybe 25% sprinkle in some sort of technical things if you want to sprinkle in 25%. And the reason I hesitated, Benny, is because I know there are coaches out there, and I get it. You might have 7-year-olds or 8-year-olds or 9 or 10 who can't even kick a soccer ball from here to, you know, 3 yards away. So then, okay, if you can't even kick a soccer ball from here to 3 yards away in any sort of accurate manner, you can't teach building out of the back. You can't teach build out patterns or give and goes or any of that. So, okay, you have a unique situation. You have to do the technical exercises. So in that context, Ben, fine. Do 100% technical. But I think what you've witnessed is that even at 12 years of age, when people already have enough musculoskeletal structure where they can actually apply decent force to the ball, and they can actually get a ball from here to 10 yards away. In that case, if somebody can kick the ball from here to 10 yards away or 15 yards away, you should already be working in the collective.
Yeah. I think the biggest thing that I see, Gary, is why coaches are forced to do this is because this is what the parents want to see, bro.
Yes.
They want to pull up to the field and see that the coach has laid out 10 mannequins and, you know, 15 poles and a line of cones. And, you know, if a parent shows up to the field and the coach has Rondo set up in a possession grid, they're going to be like, what the fuck? Like, does this coach actually know what he's doing? You know what I'm saying? And that's why coaches are, even if coaches know that, hey, this isn't what I should be doing, they're still going to do it, because at the end of the day, the parent is the customer. Without the parent, they don't have a team. They don't have a platform to train, right? And so coaches show up to the session and say, like, yeah, hey, I'm going to set all this stuff up, and, you know, we're going to spend 15 to 20 minutes doing bells and taps and scissors at the start of the session, because that's what the parents want to see. If you don't do that, the parents are bouncing, bro. The parents are bouncing, like, plain and simple. And even that's, Gary, you said, right, if they're 7 years old and they don't know how to kick a ball, like, okay, yeah, do the technical stuff, but why not do a 4v0 rondo where they're going to get receiving across the body, they're going to get first touch, they're going to get passing. But what do the coaches do instead? It's like, all right, let's do a simple passing pattern, or let's do, hey, you do 20 toe taps, you do a scissor, and then you pass it to the next guy. It's like, bro, come on, dude. But at the end of the day, that's the reality of it. Like, the parents want to see that, dude, because they don't know any better. You know, they don't know any better. So what is the coach forced to do in that situation, bro? I mean, they have to do that kind of stuff, right?
That is coupled or bunched into my point number one, that the market forces coaches into doing this sort of stuff, because the narrative is out there that this is the way to develop individuals. Yeah. So the parents read all this bullshit nonsense from the media, bullshit nonsense from coaches who don't know dick. That's where they're getting their information from, and bullshit quotes from overseas. And then, that's what they have in their heads. And so you as a coach are forced to do those stupidities. And look, I'm going to say not all coaches, because if you're a very powerful coach, then you're going to do your thing, because you actually are competent and are powerful. And then you can just overpower the parents with your deep expertise and clearly your charisma and your education prowess, right? So let's use the example of Brian, for instance. Nationally renowned, he's accomplished all these sorts of things. And then, you know, his communication style, and you know how he can just grab the parents together and say, hey, this is how it's done. And then the parents will go along with it. You know what I mean? So I get it, but 99% of the marketplace isn't Brian.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I mean, you have to have that type of charisma and energy and deep subject expertise in order to sell that to parents, you know, because here's the other thing. A lot of coaches aren't good salesmen. You know, maybe they're extremely good at their craft of coaching a team, but when it comes to selling something to the parents or selling their methodology, they probably struggle with that, Gary. And another thing to bring up is most every club team in this country, excluding academies and all that type of stuff, they're training twice a week. Okay. And if you're training twice a week, even if you're as a coach, you're running a perfect session, you have the perfect balance of every ingredient that you need, twice a week is not enough for a player to develop into something special. Like, if you're just training twice a week with your club and that's all you're doing, even if it's the perfect session on Monday, perfect session on Wednesday, not even close to the amount of work that you need, bro. And a lot of times what happens is that the parents start blaming the coach. It's like, oh, well, I've been with you for 2 years. Why hasn't my player developed? You know, but you only see him twice a week. And at the end of the day, is that really the coach's fault, or is that the parents' fault, or on the kid's fault? Because again, you can't just train on Monday and Wednesday and play on the weekend and expect to all of a sudden have developed into some super phenom, bro. You need every single day, eat, shit, fucking breathe the game. Otherwise, you're not gonna turn into something special. You got what I'm saying?
Yeah, like, but Benny, not even turn into something special. Just kind of get better. Like, period. Get better. Just develop even a little bit. You know, just doing two times a week and a game on the weekend, and that's all you do, you aren't going to get better, really. Like, forget phenom status. You're 2 years from now, you're still going to suck.
Yeah, 100%. And it always comes down to, coach, why aren't you making my player better? Or coach, why hasn't your little Johnny developed over the past 2 years? Well, you tell me, on Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday, what was little Johnny doing? Was he fucking on the wall, watching soccer, working on his first touch, or was he fucking on his iPad and, you know, or playing T-ball too as well, you know? That's another big thing, fucking playing other sports. So it's
it's the distinction between recreation and non-recreation. Recreation versus like legitimately competitive, right? If you're just doing two times a week and you're doing the bare minimum, you're just showing up basically, then you're in for recreational. That's what you're here for. So parent X, Y, or Z, why are you telling me these things? Like, your player and you guys are a recreational soccer family, which is perfectly fine, but let's just understand where we are.
100%. And Gary, within the 343 masterclass coaching, parent education, you list out three reasons as to why a coach shouldn't be spending the majority of time on, you know, on the individual or on the technical skills of a player. The first one, if your goal is to differentiate or separate yourself from the rest of the team and everybody within your team is doing the same individual training, everybody is going to rise the same as you, right? There's no difference in what I'm doing versus what player B is doing, right? And so as a coach, if that is your weekly sessions of, hey, 50% of the time in the training session, we're going to be working on the individual, we're going to be working on the technical, well, every player is still going to develop the same way or at the basically the same growth. So if you are an individual player and your goal is, hey, I'm going to be better than this guy, you better be putting in fucking countless hours outside of the team environment. So that was reason number one. Anything to expand on?
No, not really. I always look at everything in terms of visuals, mathematical sort of things. And so, depending on where you are in the pecking order on your team, let's say that you are in the middle, you know, let's say that there's 10 players and you're player number five on the skill level or the goodness side of the equation. If you want to beat out number four, number three, number two, well, doing the same thing and the same amount of hours as those guys, well, those guys are going to improve at the same rate that you improve. So you have to do more, Benny. It's a very simple equation. It's not complicated.
Yeah, 100%.
And by the way, you don't even have to overtake them. Just catching up, you're going to have to do a hell of a lot more work than they do.
You're saying if you're on the bottom end of the roster and you're trying to catch the guys at the top, right?
And if you're at the top, I mean, I don't know how big the gap is between you and the rest of the roster, because depending on how big that gap is, if you just aren't putting in the work outside, the rest of the roster is going to catch up to you. Not to mention the other players in the city, the other players in the region, the other players in the state, the other players in the country, the other players in other countries, the other players across the world. Everybody's on this curve, right, of improvement. And that curve of improvement is a function of how many hours of work you're putting into it. Yes, it's also a function of other things too. DNA, home culture, you know, watching a lot of football, learning from people who actually know what they're talking about. All those things are also a factor, but you actually control how much foot contact you make with soccer balls outside of your team training environment. That's an element that you actually can control. Even if your parents don't know dick about soccer, even if your coach is a moron, even if, you know, you don't even own a television because you're dirt poor, you know, so you can't even watch football on TV, you can control, you can get a ball. If you don't have a ball, go get some aluminum foil and wrap it around some piece of trash. No, Benny, you laugh, but we would do that stuff.
No, you know what I mean?
I would get like buck and people are just, right. I would get like empty paint buckets, you know, because my dad would paint the house once in a while. And sometimes he would have like almost empty paint buckets and that haven't been used in years. They're just sitting in the garage. I'm like, and we needed something. So I'm like, I'm going to grab this paint bucket and use it kind of to form a goal, you know, in the backyard or something. before he comes home from work. And then I have to scramble to make sure that that shit goes back in the garage. So you can do stuff.
No, I laugh because today you will never hear that, bro. You'll never hear a kid that can't afford a ball and is going to fold up fucking 30 socks together and make it into a ball or...
That's good. You know? That's good that you said socks, because I did socks too.
Another one. I know. I trust me, bro. I know all about that, bro. But you'll never hear that today, bro. If they can't get it, all right, fuck it. I'm gonna go play something else. That's the difference between today and the other generations, bro.
Okay, but, and that's fine. Just don't complain that you didn't make it and other players made it, because other players are doing that somewhere. Yeah. Other players across the world are doing that.
Yeah, true. I think it's important for the audience sake to provide a little context as to why we're saying that in the team environment, you shouldn't focus on the individual. A big point that you bring across, Gary, is that, and this is obvious, but maybe some people aren't even thinking about it, is that soccer is a collective sport. It's a team sport. It's not tennis. It's not golf, right? You have to know how to function within the team. Okay. And so if within your club sessions, from the time you're 8 years old to 16 years old, and the majority of the time you're spending it on individual work and ball mastery and technicality, okay, great. Maybe you've improved a little bit in that aspect. But now you're moving on to high school, you're moving on to college, and you have no idea how to be a part of that collective. That is a massive issue, bro. Massive. You can be the greatest fucking technical player in the world, but if you don't know how to play within the team environment, you're not going anywhere, bro. I think it's important for the audience to understand that context.
And they have it confused because their rebuttal is, oh, well, the technical is the foundation, guys. It's the base. So you develop the technique first and then you do the other stuff. Okay, but we're talking about the team training environment here. You develop your technique to the highest possible levels, or the vast majority of your technical development is done outside of the team training environment. That is a fact. That is reality across the entire planet. You learn it on your own against the wall. You learn it in pickup games. You learn it with your buddy or your brother or your dad or your whoever playing in the park once in a while, just passing the ball back and forth at different ranges, at different speeds, or doing one-on-ones, or you learn it outside of the team training environment. And by the way, if you have a coach or a club or whatever that's doing all this silly technical individual isolated work in the team training environment, if that's what they're doing, you're falling massively behind everybody else across the world who's actually learning how to play football while you're fucking around there. And also, if you're doing that in your team environment, when you leave the team environment, when are you going to learn the team game? Like, when is that going to happen? It's not true. People are brainwashed here to say, oh, well, it's fine. Like, you know, you'll start teaching the team stuff at 14 or 15 or 16 or 18. No, bro. No, you're so far behind, guys. So far behind. The other thing that they don't understand what technique actually means. They think that technique is doing this freestyle sort of stuff or this juggling sort of stuff. Oh, that is valuable. Get touches on ball, fine. But technique is more developed in the rondos. It's more developed because it's technique focused on the real game.
Yeah, the other thing that, okay, just to play devil's advocate here, they always say like, oh, well, if you're teaching them all this team stuff and possession, right, you're basically creating robots and you're fucking limiting their creativity and you're not allowing them to express themselves on the field. But the reality is that if your team has more possession, you are actually giving your players more opportunities to flourish in 1v1 moments and more opportunities to be creative as a winger, to go and take on the left back or right back. Like, when you're playing random fucking jungle ball, just kick it long, like, bro, there's no creativity in that, dude. It's like, hit it to your best players, fucking let them run, and hopefully the guy up top can sauce a guy up and score a goal. Like, by allowing your team to dominate possession and work as a team, you are giving your players more opportunities to be on the ball. To me, I don't see how, like, people that are against possession and saying that it stifles creativity.
They're brainwashed, Benny.
What game are you watching?
They're brainwashed. Yeah. They're brainwashed. They're brainwashed by the narratives that exist out there. They're brainwashed. Yeah. And a lot of the coaches who recite this sort of stuff, this nonsense, it's because they are the incompetent ones. They're incapable of actually doing it. They don't know how, and they're terrified to try because they think they'll fall flat on their face, or they have all these nonsense ideas in their head, like, oh, my players aren't good enough to do it. So I'm not even going to, you know, like, if I try to do it with these players, then it's all going to be shit, you know? And they'll put the blame on the quality of their players if they do try and fail. Oh, it's because my players are shit. They don't look at themselves and say, no, me as a coach, I don't know what I'm doing. And so they latch onto this narrative, Benny, of all that stuff creates robots. All that stuff is not development. What is development is what I actually do. I give them massive freedom. They can dribble as much as they want in the games. They can dribble as much as they want, you know, whenever they want. If you're a center back in the box corner and you want to make somebody, oh, that's his creativity. We don't want to stifle it. It gets coaches off the hook, Benny, to do this.
Yeah, sure. It keeps their paycheck coming in, dude.
And the parents are listening to the same stupid narratives, and so they buy into that too. So if there ever is a question or something like that, there's no question. The parents actually think that the coach is good because he lets them just play. Let the game be the best teacher. Let them dribble. And they'll cite stupid things that are in the mainstream, like, oh, well, imagine if they didn't let Messi dribble while he was a little kid, you know, and they told him two touches or one touches or something, you know, he wouldn't be. That's why Messi is who he is, because they just allowed him to do whatever he wanted. It's just stupendous ignorance. Do you think if a possession-based coach, let's say like Brian, myself, or all you know, the thousands who have gone through the 343 coaching platform and have had wild success, okay, by implementing the methodology. Do you think if any of those coaches or us, if we had Messi on our team, that we would be telling Messi, oh, no, don't dribble. One touch, two touch. Bro, come on. You're on drugs. Of course we're going to have the kid. We would say, give it to the little guy. You know, and when the little guy gets it, you go do all the damage you want. Of course we're going to do that. And we actually do that with players of ours who are obviously not Messi, but they have that, like, that is their skill. Their skill is they are good dribblers. And you can clearly see, because of our experience too, that player has a projection into the future of being a winger, of being an attacking force, you know? So yeah, we are going to give you liberty, but not stupid, crazy liberty, because we also have to teach them how to play the team game, because it is a team game.
It's really sad to me, Gary, that, like, I've been coaching club for the past 10 years, okay? And I've seen countless coaches who run their sessions as everything that we just talked about, all individual, all technical, dribbling through cones, and their teams have still been successful, right? They have good players, and everybody in the community is now saying, like, oh, wow, look at this coach. Look at how he develops his players. This is the way to go. And then you have, like, even some of my older teams that I had when I was first starting, it's like, as a coach and as a practitioner, as somebody that has been around the game, and I see my players string together a 10, 15 pass sequence multiple times in the game, but we don't win the game. And then the parents come and say, like, oh, well, you know, we're not winning, we're not developed. But I'm like, dude, I wish you could see what I'm seeing right now. Like, your kids are actually playing football. They are actually understanding how to play as a team. They might not be winning because the other team has a fucking 8-year or 10-year-old girl that's fucking way bigger than everybody and faster, and she scores 3 goals on us. But did you not recognize that our team was building out of the back, losing your man, fucking stringing together 7-8 pass sequences multiple times in the game. The parents don't see that. The parents see what the score is at the end of the game. And it's like, oh, that team won. Their coach is developing them better. Or that team won a state cup. Fuck, I should go and join that team. It's like that. That would be my advice to parents. Is like, one, you have to learn a little bit of the game to see if you like your son or daughter is actually progressing. But, and I know winning is important. Winning is fucking, it's huge. But also, don't fucking be so quick to jump teams or jump clubs just because your team is not winning. Like, ask yourself, is your son or daughter actually learning how to play the game? Or are they just on a team that wins every fucking week because they have ultra talented players that, by the way, the coach had nothing to do with that development. You know, it's just like, hey, I'm going to pick up this kid. This kid's going to score 6 goals for me a game. And then all of a sudden I can claim like, hey, look at my fucking players. You see what I'm getting that great? It's a big frustration that I have. And I know a lot of people have that same frustration, man.
Of course. The kids in the good context are actually learning how to play football. And when they watch games now, professional games, they actually understand way more of what they're watching because they get it. Like if they watch professional teams playing and you're a left mid or whatever, and you're watching the left mid and you're watching them connect passes, you can identify with that left mid because they're making the same sorts of decisions that you make at your club team because you were taught and you can feel it. So you get even a higher soccer IQ watching professional matches when you have actually been taught how to play football.
Yeah,
it's crucial. And everything you just described makes it very clear of where this pressure to win comes from. The pressure to win fundamentally comes from the parents. Or in a huge proportion from the parents. And the coaches feel that pressure. You described it perfectly, Benny. So when there's a massive hypocrisy in this country, oh, it shouldn't be about winning. And you hear that over and over and over and over and over again. And yet, then they show up to their son or daughter's games and son or daughter's club situation. And for them, it's all about winning, literally. And if the team's not winning, then they have a problem with it. So, guys, which is it? Is winning the problem in American soccer? Winning at the youth level shouldn't be important, like you yourself have been saying for all these years and chime in on social media, blah, blah, blah. But then when it comes to your son or daughter's team, the coach better be winning. Otherwise, he's not a good coach and we got to go somewhere else. So, bro, what are we doing?
It's crazy. Back in the day, I got a coach or I got a text from a coach saying like, hey, can you cover my game? And I'm like, yeah, sure. He's like, just do your best not to lose, bro, because all the parents are on my ass. Like we lose one more game and fucking parents are bouncing. I'm toast, bro. Like, I can't tell you how many teams I've been a part of where I've had to put out fires of parents saying like, hey, we're not winning. Like, I don't want my son or daughter to lose confidence at a young age. Like, they're being discouraged from the game because they're not winning. And I'm just thinking to myself, like, you guys are soft, bro. You guys are fucking soft, dude. Like, I get it too. Like, believe me, as a coach, you feel more responsibility to win than any player or any parent. Like, at the end of the day, it's your show, right? The kids show up to your training sessions. You're teaching them what you want to teach them. You make the lineup. You come up with the tactics. And you feel the pressure as a youth coach to win, bro. Even if you're not going to get relegated, even if you're not going to get promoted to the next league, you will not have a team next season if you aren't winning games, bro. You will not have a team next season.
And by the way, it's not just for the parents. Because if you want to gain credibility with your players, you have to win. It's just intuitive. Everybody wants to talk and get, oh, let's get rid of scores and let's get rid of standings at the young ages and all this stuff. The kids internally, they're human beings. The kids themselves know whether you won or lost, and whether they think about it or it's instinctive, they're ascribing credibility or lack of credibility to their leader, depending on whether we win or we don't win. Not necessarily in just one game, but if you're constantly losing over and over and over again, instinctively, the kids are saying, I don't know if this coach knows what he's doing. And if you're constantly winning, if you're perpetually winning all the time, instinctively, the kids think, coach knows what he's doing. I'm going to pay attention. I'm going to listen. He has all the authority in the world. So you as a coach know this also, if not explicitly, instinctively. And so that's also where the pressure to win comes from. Because if you win, that gives you power and credibility in the following week and the training sessions and everything to implement what it is that you want to implement and have the players pay attention to you versus fuck you off.
Some of the worst coaches that I've ever seen, Gary, are the best recruiters. And in the community, they're known and respected as great coaches.
Yeah,
they totally. They are the worst possible coach, but they know how to recruit. They bring in the best players to their teams. And hey, all of a sudden you're in the community and, oh yeah, this coach, fucking coach Johnny, this guy's fucking amazing, bro. Like go and bring your son or daughter to him. This guy's fucking amazing.
Totally.
But watch one of their sessions, it's fucking shocking, dude. Shocking. But yeah. At the end of the day, it's like recruiting is big, dude. If you want to implement a possession-based methodology and have a team that plays and fucking builds out of the back, you can do that and you can still build up your team, but you need to have players that are going to fucking execute and help you win. Because if you don't, you're not going to have a team, bro. You know?
Yeah. Every season you have to upgrade, Benny. And this is another nonsense narrative in the ecosystem that recruiting is bad. And then you should just always have the same team and you should always be improving, you know, even the lowest of players. Yeah. While you're on your team, you should be helping everybody, obviously, of course. But after the season is over, whenever the registration windows open again, and that stuff, you need to recruit. You go and get better players, and your worst players, you say, hey, you're better off going somewhere else, maybe because you'll get more playing time or something, and you need to upgrade. And if you do not upgrade, aside from you saying, oh, eventually you'll just lose your team, the better players on your team, they're looking for greener pastures all the time. The parents are looking for greener pastures. So you need to upgrade the team in order to continue developing those players that are already on your team. You have to do this. And the worst thing about the American soccer ecosystem, the racket, the huge scam that has occurred, is that everything has been centralized to closed leagues. So MLS Next is a closed league. You cannot earn, your team cannot earn its way into that league. You can't do it. So you as a coach can't take your team season after season and win and earn your way into the highest tiers. So the recruiting piece that you just said, Benny, is the easiest thing on planet Earth for anybody who has the badge. I've got the badge. I raid clubs who don't have the badge for their best players, and they're going to get the players.
And they're going to win.
It's as simple as that.
And they win and then they get elevated. Yeah. That's how it works.
Yeah, and they can't get relegated out. So those coaches there are forever locked into the top tier and forever enjoying an unmerited reputation of being a good coach because you're winning. And well, it's easy. It's easy to fucking win. You have a badge. You can recruit.
Yeah. I thought what you were going to say, Gary, when you're talking about like one of the worst things, or I thought you were going to say that coaches aren't upfront with players and don't tell them how it is to players and families, to where it's like, let's say you're coaching a flight one or flight two team, and you know that this kid is nowhere near the level, but you don't tell the parents that. You tell them like, hey, you know what? He does have potential, or he can improve to become a starter on this team, when you know as like a matter of fact, 100%, that is not the truth, bro.
Yeah,
that is a big problem, bro, because so many coaches will not tell it how it is, dude. And why? They're forced to, because if they do tell it how it is, you lose half your team, and then all of a sudden your team folds, and now you don't have a paycheck to come in, you know? It's 100%. Very rare when a coach will say, I'm sorry, but no, you're not good enough.
Yeah.
You know,
and you have a boss as a coach, which is the club, and whoever is your direct boss, whether it be the DOC or the club president or whatever, hey, they're running a business. They need to stay afloat. By the way, I hope everybody in the audience doesn't immediately go to their brainwashing centers of their brain where they think, oh, see, it's all about money and they're getting rich off of kids. Nobody's getting rich. The DOC is not getting rich. Your typical DOC in American soccer is barely scraping by. This is a reality. And if they're doing well, meaning, okay, maybe they're making six figures, 100, 110, 120, 130, 140, something. And we're already, with those numbers, we're already entering very rare territory, okay? Almost nobody is making that sort of money. Even if you are making that sort of money, you aren't getting rich. In America, that's kind of like, I mean, barely there. So what is my point? I was going to circle back to, this is what I was going to say. Because we get a lot of criticism, and that's fine. You guys can criticize us or me as much as you want. Oh, Gary, you're so negative, blah, blah, blah. It's not that I'm being negative. You're taking it as negative because you've lived in this bubble your whole life where people don't tell you the truth, which you just said, Benny. They are not told the truth because telling people the truth is bad for their own careers and their own pocketbook. And so they come to me and they listen to the 343 podcast or what I write or anything, and they're like taken aback. Yeah, because I'm telling you guys the truth. And that's why the establishment doesn't want me, doesn't like me, doesn't distribute me, doesn't promote me, because I'm the guy out here telling people how it is. I'm not out here painting you a rosy picture in hopes that you'll become one of my customers, which is what everybody else does. They all paint this rosy picture out there because that will attract followers and likes and retweets and buy my ebook or join my personal training or do whatever, or please MLS hire me. Look at how good of a boy I am. You know, maybe I can be a reporter for you, or please join my Patreon, you know, or subscribe to me on Substack and pay me $50 a year. They're just telling you, they're not telling you the truth, guys. They're just lying to you, playing politics to get you to open up your wallet. And if it's not money, it's attention that they crave. And that's what they're going for. And I'm the only dumbass out here saying, fuck it, I'm just going to tell you the truth. And whatever the fuck you guys want to do, you do.
That's why I think you have such a loyal following, dude. Because a lot of the comments that I see on YouTube are, nobody is saying what you're saying. Nobody's saying what you're saying because they can't. Their fucking mouth is zip tied in. Yeah, they're not allowed to, bro. But you're independent and you say whatever the fuck you want. But one thing that Jimmy said that's sticking to me and is kind of relevant to right now is that the first negative experience that a family or a player experiences with the coach, let's say they get benched, or let's say, you know, the coach tells them off at training, at that first experience, the parent's first reaction is, all right, we're bouncing. It's like, hey, my kid was the starter for the last fucking year, and all of a sudden for a game he's on the bench. All right, fuck you, Coach Gary, I'm fucking out of here. I'm gonna go take my talents elsewhere. Like, that is what our country and this soccer culture has become here. It's like entitlement, bro. Like, oh yeah, I've been the starter for the last 2 years, the fucking coach benched me, fuck him, I'm gonna go find a new club. Or the coach fucking said something to me. They said something to me at training and told me off. No, I don't like that. Never. I'm going to go somewhere else.
Yeah. They want, they're asking to be lied to. They're asking for it.
Yeah.
Please lie to me. That's the signal that they all throw out there. Players and parents alike, and not just youth, professional players are asking to be lied to. They don't want to be told, bro, you suck. Bro, you're not putting in the work. Bro, like, why are you fucking around on the PlayStation instead of, you know, hitting the gym? Or bro, why are you eating dog shit food, pizza stuff? Like, you're a professional athlete. What are you doing? Or, bro, you think that you can play in City? Look at your performances. Like, what have you merited to think that you are capable in playing in La Liga? Are you out of your fucking mind? They don't want to hear that.
Yeah. No, DeGarry, I mean, I'm gonna just be 100% honest with the audience and everybody. Like, as a coach in this game, there's been multiple opportunities and times when, like, a player comes off the field, they get subbed, and just, you know, as a coach, like, an absolute shocking performance, turnover every time he got the ball, right? But when he comes off the field, what do you, like, you can't rip the kid, bro. What do you have to say?
No,
it's like, hey, good job, bro. Like, you know, you find the one good thing that they did, and that's what you tell them. It's like, hey, you know,
yes,
fucking Jose, fucking great tackle right there. But in the back of your mind, you remember the last 10 plays where he turned over the ball every single time. And not to say that I don't fucking highlight that to players. It's like, hey, you fucked up here. But it can't, like, in today's generation in society, the player can't come off the field and you say, like, what the fuck, Jose? Like, you fucking lost it 10 times. Like, shocking performance. Because at the end of the day, the parent, Jose, will go and tell his parents, and then the parents fucking want to leave. It's like,
Benny,
I don't know, dude. It's so fucking backwards, bro.
And we're not advocating for 100% brutal honesty and diarrhea of the mouth, whatever it is that you're thinking that you should say. We're not advocating for that.
But, like, that's how it should
coaches,
be. How it should be, right?
No, not really. Because as coaches, we're also managers, and managers of people, and managers of psychology, you know? So you have to understand your audience too, and say, okay, this player A versus this player B, what is player A's buttons? How can I play the instrument that is player A to maximize their potential currently in the short term, the medium term, and the long term? You know, because player A might completely fold if you tell them certain things, right? So you can't be 100, open up the floodgates and just spray him with all the doses of reality. You pick and choose your moments, because if you don't, then you're not actually managing the player, and you're not managing the team, and that's not in the best interest of the other players and the whole team, the team as a whole. You get what I'm saying, right? So you are a business leader. You're a manager of human beings. So at your place of employment, you might be sucking ass, and the employer notices that you show up to your Starbucks shift late all the time, and you, like, are dicking around on your phone in the back, and you aren't, you know, really courteous to your customers all the time, but you don't necessarily go right down their throat immediately. You let some things go. You kind of try to make adjustments here or there a little bit. Hopefully you can steer the ship a little bit. And over the course of time, just like in players, you see whether it's working or it's not working. And then you make a decision. Do we cut this player loose and recruit somebody else who is going to do the job? But you know what I mean? So you can't just destroy people.
I get what you're saying, Gary, but at the same time, it's like, if I think, I think about Bielsa. Bielsa's running a session, or he's in coaching in the game, and player comes off the field. Even if he knows that player can't handle criticism in the right way, this will still telling him off, right? But in a way that is going to be communicated in the right way to this player. You know what I'm saying? I get what you're saying, is that you have to manage each individual player, and you have to see what they can take and what they can't take, but I don't know. It's just a weird, like, dilemma of how far can I cross this line right now? Because at the end of the day, if you truly care about the player and you truly love the player, you're not going to just let him get away with fucking up every game, dude. You're going to tell him, like, dude, what the fuck, bro? I know you have more potential than that, but you fucking lost the ball every time. If you didn't care about them, then every fucking game, you'd just be like, hey, great job, Jose. You know, I'm fucking proud of you. Even though you know that he didn't have a good game. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's an art, Benny. It's an art. I think your main theme and main point is correct in the context that that line that is acceptable to cross has been getting worse and worse and worse and worse over the years. Because, you know, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, the players were more resilient. The families and parents were more resilient and were way more open and accepting of being told the truth and criticism, you know, and they won't break down into tears, metaphorically speaking. But over the course of time, and fast forward to 2026, it's kind of like if you even say anything almost at all, it's a big dilemma. And that's also wrong.
It's sad. There's times when I want to be like, you are a fucking lazy sack of shit. You have a shocking first touch. You fucking have the worst attitude out of everybody here. But you can't be like that blunt, right? You have to be like, hey, you know, your first touch is good, but it could use, you know what I mean? But I feel like that message doesn't get sent across as clearly as your first touch fucking sucks, bro. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. It's hard, bro. You have to find that line. You have to find that balance, dude.
Yeah. Why do you think I don't coach? I have no interest. Why would I want to put myself through that? Are you kidding me? I already have enough issues, even, you know, teaching at the university level. So I'm dealing with 17 to 25 year olds, you know, depending on on their level and the course level. And the same thing kind of applies. It's gotten worse and worse and worse and worse. And university students, Benny, and I'm not teaching some nonsense too. I'm teaching like hardcore subjects, hardcore physics. So many of these students, by the time they get to me, and these are, you know, if I'm teaching undergrads, lower division stuff, I'm getting pre-med, I'm getting engineering majors, I'm getting those sorts of people in the lower physics courses. So many of them can barely even read or write. So many of them even know how to form a proper sentence. So many of them can't even do basic algebra. And somehow they got to me. And you're already supposed to kind of be in your calculus courses with these lower physics. They can't do anything. So what has happened is that during elementary school and during high school, teachers and the school system, everything, they just pass them, even though their performance is shockingly bad. They're utterly incapable of doing anything. They just give them C's or B's or whatever the fuck, just for showing up, you know, and putting a butt in a seat. And they've learned nothing. They have no skills. So they go through the entire system and they get to me and they have the reasoning capabilities of a third grader. They have the writing capabilities of a third grader. They have the math capabilities of a third grader. And I am not exaggerating. It is not an exaggeration. So what am I supposed to do? I will confess that even my standards have been degraded. I've lowered them over the course of time, because the reality is, if I kept the same standards as when I started teaching physics at the university many years ago, very few people would pass.
That's what I'm saying. Gary, like, you can't go to the fucking student and say, hey, Justine, you have the fucking reading level of a third grader, right? You can't say, what do you have to do? You yourself are lowering your standards and saying like, all right, like, this is how it's going to be. You can't say fucking Michael, like, you don't even know how to fucking read, bro. Yeah, it's too late at that point, right?
But it's too late. I can't change that.
But you can't be honest with them to say like, hey, Michael, it's too late for you. You cannot say that, right? You'll get fired. Totally. But if you were to tell Michael that, don't you think that Michael would be like, fuck, Gary's right. Like, I need to fucking do something, you know?
Well, that's why I do go on rants in my classes, and I speak in general. Instead of singling out Michael, I speak in general. And I say these sorts of things in one form or another. I'm like, guys, you know, I'll kind of put it on another class, but they know it's applying to them personally too. I'll say, guys, you know, I have this, introductory to quantum physics course, you know, that I teach in the afternoons. You're my morning class. And bro, they can't even do X, Y, or Z. Like, I'm asking myself, how the hell did they even get to my quantum mechanics course? Like, it makes no sense. Who passed these people? Like, they should have failed physics 225, 226. They should have failed. They should never have gotten to my class. So we're lowering our standards and people are just passing without knowing anything. And I know that they're thinking about themselves at that point. They're like, shit, well, I can't do shit either.
What you just described, I have used that technique so many times with my teams and saying like, hey, I have this other team and they show up and they're not motivated and they're fucking lazy. But in reality, I'm talking about two or three players in front of me right now, making eye contact with them, you know, they don't do anything. And you can see the wheels spinning in their head. They're like, that sounds like me. But wouldn't you just love to come out and just say like, no, motherfucker, it's you. You are fucking.
Because what's the gain? What's the gain? I don't know. There's nothing to gain. And I don't think that's going to necessarily trigger that person into action and change their whole life. I'm speaking in the context that I just laid out. So I'm dealing with 17 to 25 year olds and they have the reading capabilities or math capabilities of a third grader. They are 10 years behind at this point. Are they really going to change their entire structure, life structure to become somebody productive and somebody competent? I doubt it, man.
No, that's true. I guess I'm thinking about like a little bit younger age, because if you remember when you were a kid or in your teenage years and you had some type of authority figure, whether it be a coach or a teacher, and they just call you out, like, do you remember how that feels? And how, like, after you're like, they are right, actually, like, I do need to fucking do something about this. You know what I mean? I get with college level kids at that point, it might be too late, but as a 12-year-old or 14-year-old and somebody calls you out and somebody that you respect and they're like, no, Benny, guess what? Your first touch is shocking. I'm thinking like, you know what? As hard as that is to hear, he's right. I need to put in way more time. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I just don't know if this generation, the way that they are, I don't know. And look, I sound like the old guy, in my day and blah, blah, blah. But guys, you all know that what I'm saying is true. I just don't know if they'll receive it the same way, Benny.
Yeah.
I don't know. True. Yeah. Okay. What else is on the docket?
No, dude, every coach nowadays is a car salesman or a politician, bro. You have to be, otherwise you're not going to survive. Otherwise, you're not going to survive.
The system forces you to be a politician. The system forces you to become great at that craft, great at being a bullshit artist. And I'm not just talking about with your players or teams. I'm talking about in the ecosystem. You're supposed to be a politician, a bullshit artist to your colleagues, to the other coaches. You're supposed to be a politician and bullshit artist to your colleagues who are above you in the hierarchy, because you want to get to that position one day, right? So you have to schmooze and network and bullshit people and be on their good side. That is what the ecosystem makes you guys into. It doesn't make you into good coaches, because good coaches don't get rewarded and by being promoted and going up the ladder. That's not what gets rewarded, guys. Let me make it clear to all the parents and everybody in the audience. What gets rewarded in the United States of America, American soccer ecosystem, which is monopolized, and as a consequence of it being monopolized, is being a good politician and networker and schmoozer and bullshitter, not being good at the craft of the sport itself. That does not get you moved up.
Yeah. If you don't make it as a coach, fucking go apply at Toyota or go run for governor of your town, Bruce.
Yeah, wild. Okay.
All right, bro.
What else?
Let's end it there for now, Gary. Let me use the restroom and then let's chat about the masterclass if you're down.
All right. Okay, go for it. Well, that's it for today, guys. Thank you for listening. A reminder for coaches, you can get both the free and premium coaching programs at 343coaching.com. Don't let anyone tell you your teams can't win by playing dominant possession-based football while also developing individual players to the highest levels. Nonsense. We've proved it at every single level, and so have hundreds of serious member coaches across the country. Now that we've moved on to the pro level, We're delivering everything we've learned in the program. Don't wait and continue delaying getting on a proven path. And parents, 343masterclass.com is where you want to go to get a working compass for navigating the American soccer landscape with your player. It's pretty bad out there, but let our experience guide you. Lastly, if you're coaching 7v7, we've got you covered there as well. Go to 7v7coaching.com. Until next time, cheers everyone, and keep building.